First of all, I just thought I'd give you a few verses on hospitality, and I may be covering stuff you already, know all about, but I don't have any way of knowing what you know, so I'll just share what I have. The first verse, and my very favorite one on hospitality, is 1 Peter 4:9 in Philip's, which says, "Be hospitable without secretly wishing that you hadn't got to be." And I think this probably hits all of us at one time or another, that, you know, we put on the smile and we're hospitable, but secretly we wished we hadn't got to be. And then another one is Romans 12, verse 9, and Romans 12, verse 13. Verse 9 says, "Don't just pretend that you love others. Really love them." And our attitude does come through to the people we entertain in our home. And it's pretty hard to fake it. And you might be able to fake it for a couple hours if they're just there for a little while. But if they happen to stay overnight or longer, then the mask wears pretty thin, doesn't it? And this reminds us, don't just pretend that you love others, but really love them. And verse 12 says, verse 13, "When God's children are in need, you be the one to help them out. And get into the habit of inviting guests home for dinner, or if they need lodging, for the night." So it's quite obvious the Lord really intends for his people to be hospitable to others. All right, and then Philippians 2, 3, and 4, I'm sure you're familiar with. "Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." Thoughtfulness. And then Isaiah 58, 10 and 11. "Feed the hungry. Help those in trouble. Then your light will shine out from the darkness, and the darkness around you will be as bright as day. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy you with all good things and keep you healthy too. And you will be like a well-watered garden, like an ever-flowing spring. Your sons will rebuild the long-deserted ruins of your cities, and you will be known as the people who rebuild their walls and cities." That was through verse 12. The idea is, if you draw out your soul to the hungry, and I think this means spiritually as well as physically, if you draw out your soul to the hungry, the Lord promises you great reward. You cannot outgive God. God will be no man's debtor. And we there's no way we can lose if we obey the Lord in this command, or, you know, any, because you simply cannot outgive him. And then Proverbs 11, 25. This is living, and it says 24 and 25. I don't know exactly where it starts. "It's possible to give away and become richer. It's also possible to hold on too tightly and lose everything. Yes, the liberal man shall be rich. By watering others, he waters himself." And I remember Wes Rogers telling about the time when he first became a Christian, of hearing about people opening their homes, having other people come in and stay. And he said, "Don't ever ask anybody in here." He said, "Man, this is my home, my castle. I don't want anybody staying overnight in my house." And, you know, ranted and raved on about, he sure wasn't ever going to do that. But then he got to noticing the blessing it was to these people that opened their homes, and as he grew in the Lord, he began saying, "Well, now look, now the next time somebody comes in town, don't be selfish and keep them all to yourself, you know. Let them come over here and stay at my house." And he has, of course, he and Betty are one of the most hospitable couples you could find, and they're no man's debtor. I mean, they're not in debt to God because of this. God is no man's debtor, and they are obviously the richer for it. Proverbs 27:17. "A friendly discussion is as stimulating as the sparks that fly when iron strikes iron." And the reason that I included that was the idea that you learn so much from the people that come into your home. It can be such a stimulating thing as you have conversation with the various people that come into your home. It's a benefit of hospitality. And then some examples of hospitality, and of course there are, you know, many in the scripture, but I'll just give you two of them. One is in 2 Kings 4, 8 and 9, and this is the story of the Shunammite woman. You remember when Elisha, the man of God, was coming by, and she said to her husband, "Let's make a little room and put in a bed and a table and a chair, and then as often as he comes by, he'll stay here with us." And she said right before this, said, I perceive that this is a man of God. And she knew that here was a man that was godly and that they could learn from as well as share their home with. And so she wanted to be hospitable to this godly man, even to the extent of building on a room, we would say, furnishing a room in their home for this. And then Luke 10:38-42 is the familiar story of Martha and Mary. And it's very good. Let me just read it here in the Living. I think sometimes when it says Mary was cumbered about with much serving, Martha, excuse me, that doesn't say too much to us. This starts out where Martha welcomed them in the home, and then her sister Mary sat on the floor listening to Jesus as he talked. But Martha was the jittery type and was worrying over the big dinner she was preparing. Can't you just picture yourself sometimes in this? The jittery type, you know, sometimes I feel like all my guests see is me jumping up, you know, and they probably think, where is she going? The jittery type. She came to Jesus and said, Sir, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, Martha, dear friend, you are upset. You are so upset over all these details. There is really only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and I won't take it away from her. And you know, there might be a good lesson in that on just the kind of meal you prepare. You know, are you trying to go whole hog all out to make an impression? You know, just to make an impression? So that by the time you sit exhausted in the chair, they all know that, boy, you've really put forth an effort and you want them to know it. And you can't be a relaxed hostess because, you know, you've just outdone yourself. You know, better a simple meal that you can enjoy with them. And even if it doesn't impress them, than one that you spent so much time on elaborately preparing if it meant that you were not a hostess to them. It's a good lesson, I think, in that. And then, how to meet and introduce and receive guests, which, very simple things, which you probably all know, but first of all, just being friendly and being very warm in your greeting. Have you ever been to somebody's house where you knew when you walked in the door that you really weren't too welcome? That they wished you were home, in your own home, not theirs? Or that you disturbed something? So if you welcome them warmly, be friendly. And for some of you, this is easier than others. Some of you just aren't necessarily the outgoing type. And so it's an effort on your part to make somebody feel at home. But it's well worth giving of yourself in this way. And then being a gracious hostess. Being a gracious hostess. And then making them feel really welcome. And of course, the basis of any of these things is love. And only the Lord can give you that. And then some attitudes and qualities that are important in hospitality. I guess the foremost one we'd have to say is love again. But I think it manifests itself in number two, which would be servanthood, being a servant. And this is something that doesn't come naturally to any of us. Sometimes we serve more naturally, it seems, than others, than other people, but I think often at the basis of our natural servanthood is attention to ourselves. You know, I do it for what it does for me, sort of thing. Because I don't think it's natural to the human nature to serve anybody but self. So, being a servant, having a servant heart, and remember that the Lord Jesus, when he was trying to teach his disciples this lesson, you know, they said, who's the greatest, and who's going to be the biggest, and who's going to sit beside you, and all these questions. And he said, when people come to a banquet, who is greater? Is it the one that sits down at the table or the one who serves? And of course, well, obviously the one who gets to sit at the table. And he said, yet I am among you as one who serves. Which is quite a lesson. And then he again says that at the marriage feast of the Lamb, we are the ones who will be seated and he will serve us. Which is a very melting picture of the Lord's servant heart. And like the little Amy Carmichael thing we read about, the son remembered the phrase, Jesus took a towel. And so being a servant, Matthew 20, verse 26 and 27. And then being enthusiastic about it. You know, you can do everything just exactly the right way, But you can let everybody know that it sure is hard, or it's a drudgery, or you hate every minute of it, or, you know, some other attitude. Colossians 3:23 is a good verse on this. Whatever you do, do it heartily or wholeheartedly as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that it's of the Lord you receive the inheritance or the reward. And then another attitude is this same thing I mentioned under number one, this idea of graciousness, being a gracious person. This has to do with your attitude, too, and with the way you say what you say and the way you do what you do. Have you ever been in somebody's home where they did the right things, but you felt very uneasy because you knew that somehow it offended them or bothered them or, you know, something wasn't right, and they had no gracious spirit with which to make you feel at home? Luke 4:22 and Proverbs 11:16. And another quality that's, or attitude that's important in hospitality is sincerity, which is so easily discovered. You know, the one who puts on the mask and talks in a very sweet voice and always says spiritual things and always looks spiritual comes across as phony as can be. But the one who is sincere, who doesn't necessarily smile all the time, but who's sincere, this comes through. And there's a great deal of difference. Someone who is so syrupy sweet and smiles all the time and wears a mask, boy, that's hard to be around. And I always want to, you know, pull it apart and say, what are you thinking under there? And I had a girl that I was trying to help when I was at Glen Eyrie who was like this. And I'd come away from my time with her and, you know, kind of scratch my head and think, now, let's see, who's on first? What did we do? What was she thinking? Did we accomplish anything? And I never could figure it out. I never knew where I stood or where anybody else stood with her, because it was always sweetness and light, you know, no matter what happened. But the girl today is divorced and in pretty bad shape, because you see, one day that syrupy sweetness won't last you. And I remember saying to Addie one time, I said, oh, if I could just be like so-and-so, and named another girl like this who was, you know, that kind of girl. You know, everybody knows what's going on with me. It's on my face, and, you know, I get it off my chest, and, you know, no secrets. Jean says I would never make a good poker player because I, you know, it's all written right here. And she said, oh, Irm, you don't want to be like that. She said, I learned a long time ago that that kind of girl keeps it all down inside. Doesn't mean she has a perfect heart because she has a perfect face or because she always says the right thing at the right time. And she said, no, you don't want to be like that. And it made me realize that, you know, what seemed on the outside was not necessarily true on the inside. And this is kind of a roundabout thing that goes with this, but be a person of integrity and honesty and anything in life, no matter what it is. Because Luke 16:10 says, he that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And another portion in the same idea in the gospel says, you know, if you can't be trusted with another man's riches, who will trust you with eternal riches? And Satan can really use these moments of lack of integrity and honesty to throw up to us and to foul us up and to cause, you know, maybe the very one we want to minister to the most, the very one that we want so much to win to Christ, may be a person of more integrity than we are. And if they see this flaw in our character, there's really no excuse for it. And it's just something to pray about, and it would be a good study for you to do, even if you've never have. What does it mean to be a person of integrity and honesty? A friend of ours just really paid a great price to rectify something back when he was at one of the military academies, which, humanly speaking, would have been very easy to pass over. And it was sort of an impossible situation of an infraction of, what do they call it, the honor code, which in this case was an impossible thing. you know, it was, you could reason around every way and it would look like there was absolutely no guilt involved. But God had convicted him about it, about this matter of being a man of integrity and honesty. And it meant laying his whole career on the line. Because he could very well, you know, the academies, when they find these kind of things out, they can, that does it. They could have disciplined him and taken away his whole career. And he laid it on the line because God convicted him of it and wrote a letter. And God so honored this and intervened, and the letter came back that all was well. But, you know, in the meantime, he went through the crucible to pay the price of being filled with integrity. And at the time that this happened, this was not a conviction. It didn't even, you know, he wasn't trying to break the honor code. I don't mean that. But it was not anything that convicted him at the time. But as God spoke to his heart, he rectified it, even at this great, what looked like would be the great personal loss. And God honored it. So there's, I think there's a real need in our hearts, there is in mine, to be more aware of this, of just being filled with personal integrity and honesty. I don't know where that comes in. You can put it wherever you want. An attitude of discretion. You know, knowing when to say the right thing at the right time. And I think the whole Proverbs 31 would certainly portray a woman of discretion, wouldn't it? And then being no respecter of persons. Boy, that's hard, isn't it? You know, I'd really like to think that I kept that faithfully. And yet, it's so much easier for me to be a servant to certain people who come to my home than it is to other people. And it's so much easier for me to wait hand and feet on somebody than it is on another somebody. And yet the Scripture wants us to have, in fact commands us not to have, respect of persons. And this shows up, at least in my home, in entertaining. I'm aware of this. And then James 2, of course, is a good reference on that one. And the last thing under an attitude I'd say is be relaxed. You can grow very, very weary of being hospitable if you carry the load yourself. And if you labor under every time you have somebody in your home, if it's a big deal to you, boy, it becomes old stuff very quickly. My mother-in-law just cannot believe that we enjoy having people. It just worries her so and just nervouses her, and she just thinks that I would be worn to a frazzle, and she just cannot understand how it's possible to have this steady stream of people coming, you know. Well, if I labored over it, I learned a long time ago that I was going to have to just relax and enjoy it and let everybody else enjoy it. And, you know, I'll sit here and I think, didn't get that carpet swept. Well, you know, that's all right. You know, the world's 100 years from now, it won't matter. Or, you know, you look up and you see dust all over it and you think, oh, I forgot the dust. I didn't have that lemon pledge, you know, that does everything so quickly when the doorbell's ringing. And you know, you can either just be a nervous wreck over it, or you can stay up all night, the night before company comes, trying to get everything in shape, or you can just relax. And I remember when I was living with the girls in the apartment, and Annie Rosenbaum, who was the head of the girls' work, of the whole NAV work at that time, was coming to visit. Nervous wreck, you know. We stayed up all night polishing floors and furniture and making sure everything was in good shape. And then she came to visit the second time. And I think we maybe stayed up till midnight, kind of straightening things up. And then the third time she came to visit was here in our home. And I remember saying to her, welcome, Addie. This is the way we live. We're glad you're here. And, you know, we had a great time. And it's so, you know, Lauren Sandy's in our home a lot. And it's so great to just not be under the bondage of feeling like, you know, have I done everything? Is there, I wonder if he puts his finger across my sills at the top of the door, will he find dust, or, you know. So great to just be real relaxed and know, well, Lauren, this is the way we live. Welcome. We're glad you're here. Make yourself at home. And I find that people appreciate this attitude, because if you're nervous and if you're constantly, you know, jittery, boy, they can't relax. They don't know whether to whistle or wind their watch. And so if you're relaxed, they feel so much more at home. And I think you've been in people's homes, haven't you, where you felt free to go to the refrigerator? Mm-hmm. And then you've been in other people's homes where, man, you wouldn't move. You'd stay in your room with the door closed unless invited to come out. And, you know, you want your home, if you're going to be hospitable for your own sake as well as for the sake of others, you've got to be a relaxed hostess. And you want them to feel free to kick their shoes off and to tell you, boy, I've got to take a nap. I can't go another step. Or, you know, you want them to feel that I've had some people in the home where I felt I had to be with them every minute. I had other people where, you know, excuse me, I could say to them, now look, I've got to take a nap. Why don't you take one too? Or, you know, I've got errands to run. Why don't you go write letters or relax? Do whatever you want. I'll see you in a couple hours. And they appreciate it. You know, they're so relieved to not be on call all the time and to be able to go to the room and do what they want. And so if you're relaxed, boy, they'll love it, and they'll sense it. Right, how do you prepare for them? Well, the first way you can prepare is just by praying about being this kind of a hostess and for the guest in particular that's coming. And the second thing you can do is try and plan your menus ahead of time so that it doesn't look to them like you haven't given any thought to it, and in fact you haven't, and that it's the night 5 o'clock and you don't have a clue what you're going to have for dinner. This has a little bit of a feeling of not being wanted when this happens. And again, it's another way of making them feel relaxed if you've got things under control like this. And if you've arranged things so that you can spend some time with them. And things like housing and the beds and the linens and providing a place in your closet if you can to hang up clothes and providing one clean drawer for them to put things in is a real help. I've gone into homes where I really felt like it was a terrible imposition. And where it was just, you know, you just really weren't wanted. And then I've gone into other homes where I felt like they're really glad I'm here. You know, they've made provision like they really wanted me to be here. And that's how you want your guests to feel. And maybe just putting in some sort of a little stool in the room that they can put their luggage on, or, you know, just that little touch. If you have access to some flowers, you know, put a flower in the room or some other little homey touch that makes them feel like I'm wanted. They're ready for me. Glasses in the bathroom for them. You know, just the little thing that you might forget. Make sure they know when they come then which towel is theirs and which glass is theirs and all the little things that makes them know she's prepared everything for me. She's glad I'm here. That's what it speaks to them. Be a good conversationalist. And this means not dominating the conversation, letting your husband have a word. Many husbands, incidentally, that are the strong, silent type are that way because their wife doesn't ever give them a chance to be anything else. Don't be the kind who, when your husband is asked a question, answers it before he can get his mouth open. But neither be the dumb blonde who sits there and says nothing. You know, be an intelligent conversationalist. And be careful here again with guests that you don't put them in the corner. You know, don't fire questions at them that make them feel like, good night, the third degree, you know, and why is she asking that in public? You know, don't do anything that you're putting them on the spot. But make them again feel at home. And think through if you're having some, let's say Max was coming to visit you on the campus next year where you've gone. Well, think through on some of the things you'd like to ask Max before he comes. You know, have some questions ready so that you don't just waste the time. And then plan things for them to do while they're with you if it's that kind of a visit. Find out, for instance, if they've traveled all the way across the world and haven't had any rest. And, you know, the main thing they need from you then is a place to rest. But if they're the kind that say, boy, what's in your city to see? Then know what's here. You know, just don't say, oh, boy, we haven't seen anything here. Wonder what there is to do here. You know, have a plan where you could say, well, what do you want? What do you like to do? Here's what we have. And, you know, find some way that you could offer a car to them or go with them, send somebody else. You know, whatever the need is, try and anticipate it and meet it ahead of time. So that, again, they feel like that they're not a leftover that's hard for you to take, but you're really planning on them. Offer to do things for them, like, you know, be sensitive. If the guy's been traveling for a week, you know, you might offer to do his laundry. He'd probably be eternally grateful to you. If a family's been traveling with little children, you know they're going to have a need for laundry to be done. And just be sensitive to their needs and to what would be most important for them. Have refreshments available for them. It's one thing that always impressed me so much at the Glen was there's always a basket of fruit. Sometimes I didn't eat it, but you know it was so great to have it there because I felt welcome. Somebody had planned for us to be there. Now, we don't put fruit in the room. We just tell them the refrigerator's full, and we want them to, you know, have cold fruit in the refrigerator because it's available to them. Be sensitive if you have people who like to have their coffee first thing in the morning, and give them the coffee pot the night before and let them put it in their room and so they can have that early morning coffee. Boy, they appreciate that. Some people know that's the only way they can wake up. And incidentally, if you're a young couple that don't like coffee, and you don't own a coffee pot, that's another thing you ought to pray about and invest in, because it's a good investment. And to be able to make good coffee and serve it to people who like coffee. I think about Wayne Watts whenever he comes to our house, or Don Tabb. The first thing we do is get the coffee pot to them and put it back in their room with a jar of coffee, you know, that they can make their own coffee. You know, Wayne gets up about 4 o'clock in the morning and starts drinking coffee. And Donald, you know, was not civil until he's had about 3 pots of his black brew. And I could never make it to suit him. It's, you know, it's just, it just takes very little water to make coffee for Donald. And so, you know, I just give him the coffee pot. We bought a little 2-cup coffee pot for not heavy drinkers. And I guess it's got 3 cups in it. And then we have a 5 cup. And, you know, we've got a whole realm of coffee pots for, you know, just to suit the need. But a little thing like providing the coffee pot for him can really mean a lot to somebody who likes to wake up and have their coffee. And then give them choices. You know, what would you like? Do you want to take a bath, take a nap, go get some time alone, talk? You know, what do you want to do? And make them know that whatever they want to do is exactly what you want them to do. And be sure you orient them to your house. You know, that they know which bathroom they're going to use and which bed is theirs, and you know, that the baby sleeps next door and they'll have to forgive the noise, and, you know, whatever it is that will orient them to your house. And that's about it. I don't know if any of that's helpful or not, but it might be. I think we've got about 3 minutes before friend husband shows up. Do you have any questions? Okay.
What about when someone's visiting you and you get tired before they want to go to bed? Like, especially if it's someone who knows your husband and you don't really know him, and they want to talk, is it okay to go to bed?
Right. I think I'd settle this with my husband first. You know, make sure that it's all right with him. And then at the appropriate time, just say, well, would you all excuse me? And I don't think you have to announce, I am tired and I'm going to bed, but, you know, would you all excuse me? And then just, you know, and of course they will. And a lot of our friends that we know real well, you know, I say, well, now you all can stay up and talk all night, but I'm going to bed. And leave, you know, when it's a man here talking to Jean. And it depends on who it is and what the situation is. I'm very fortunate, again, to have a husband, like when I'm pregnant, he's very protective. And so, you know, when the pumpkin hour comes, he says, well, I've got to get little mother to bed, you know, good night, honey. And so that takes me off the hook and I can go to bed. And but I think just settle it with your husband first. Make sure that it's all right with him. And then just excuse yourself. Anything else?
I think one thing, too, to be sensitive. I know sometimes people come in to talk to Max, and it may be a guy with a problem that wants to talk. Mm-hmm. And maybe to have a signal with your husband about when you ought to leave, when it's convenient.
Right.
For you to leave, you know,
right.
So they don't have to say, honey, would you, you know, I mean, it's kind of
right.
Thing to
right.
Be
but, And a lot of times, again, too, this is part of keeping open communication. But a lot of times, you know, I can say at least to Jean, honey, is this man talk? Or, you know, do you want me in here or would you rather I didn't? You know, like, it doesn't make any difference to me. I'm not begging to come, but I'd like to come if you'd like me to. What do you want me to do? And they either say, oh, man, come in. No, we're not talking about anything personal. Or, yeah, we just need some time alone. Now, one thing that helps is that if Gene needs that kind of time alone in our house, we happen to have a place he can go, and you may not in the home you're going to be in. But if you have a little, if your husband has a little study, you could work out a little signal with him, too, that, you know, if it's man talk, that he really just needs to be alone, that he could excuse himself with the guy instead of asking you to leave, you know, but just excuse himself and say, oh, honey, we're going to go talk in the study for a little while. Why don't you bring us a cup of coffee, you know, something like that. So that it just, again, these are things you have to work out with your husband to make sure it runs smoothly. But that's a good point, Sandra.
Is there any rule, too, about, let's say that the meal is finished, and I want to get up and begin to take the things off the table
mm-hmm.
and put them in the dishwasher and get going, or maybe just get it loaded. Is there any, should you wait? I mean, like you're eating in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and people are still sitting at the table. And I can listen mm-hmm. that way. I can hear, you know, I hear everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I can get that taken care of.
Right. Well, this is what we do usually. We sit. We don't just jump up, but we sit and visit a little while, you know. And then when we always end up sitting around our table for the whole evening, it seems like. So at the appropriate time, you know, we'll just get up. And if the guests suddenly, you know, start, you know, no, just sit still. We're just going to rinse these off over here, you know. And I talk loudly now. I want to hear you. You know, make sure that they understand that you still want to be a part of the conversation and enter into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And be as quiet as you can in scraping and clanging dishes. But I think it's, personally, I enjoy going ahead with it because then I can sit down the rest of the evening with them, relaxed, without this feeling like at midnight when they go home, I'll still have the dishes to do. And that's, you know, another part of it. And then there's always the problem of the guest who will say, you know, let me help you. And you have to decide in your own heart who really wants to help you and who's just being courteous. There are some guests that you know well enough to know that they'd really love to be in the kitchen helping you quickly clean up. And if they come, then I think I'd try and make it as quick and easy as possible. And, you know, don't decide to polish the silver then that you used for the meal, or, you know, that can wait till tomorrow. You know, just make it as simple and easy as possible.
Yeah.
But if they make a, if they start to get up, you know, you always say to them, oh, no, don't bother, you know, just go ahead and talk. I can do this and listen, too. And if they settle back down, fine. But if they insist, you know, don't have a knockdown drag-out about it. You know, just accept their offer. That's the way I feel about it anyway. I know some people feel very keenly about, boy, we're not going to touch the dishes. We'll do those after you go home. But for me, this is not me, because then it hangs over my head the whole evening and I'm not relaxed.
Yeah.
And I'd rather get it done, even if it means the men going in the living room and talking and then I'm joining them later. I'd still rather, of course, in our situation, we have help. And I might just add a word. Some of you, I expect, that are going into campus ministries will have a girl living with you probably at some time. Is that true? Probably some of them will.
Maybe.
Probably some guys, maybe one girl or something. And just a little word of caution that you need to really pray and have open communication if this happens, if you have a girl living with you. If she's a girl that's working all day, you have to really sit down with her and ask the Lord to give you guidelines on how much to expect of her. And it becomes very easy in a situation like that where you haven't hired her to come be your helper. She's there supposedly for growth in ministry and in her own life and to help you, but you know, for her own growth is supposedly the reason she's there, then you have to be very careful that you don't just, quote, use her as your servant and to do all the things you don't want to do. And I couldn't tell you that, and that's something you'd have to sit down and settle. But it's just a little word of caution, because many a girl that's come into a situation like that has come out of it bitter because of a misunderstanding. So, you know, to keep the communication open and to make sure you have a good relationship, I think it's just a good word to watch that little aspect, that you don't just use them. And you may never have to face that, but in a growing ministry, it's possible you would.
Too, if you were to say about how you feel about someone in the faith crisis in our situation.
Well, I think I would... This is strictly off the top of my head. I've thought through it many times, but for this situation, I personally feel like I wouldn't have anybody living with me to start out with, and I wouldn't have anybody living with me until the ministry was such that it would be advantageous for, like, your husband to make a better use of his time to invest in these lives if he had these two key guys that have now become key guys by his investment in their lives, to have them come and live in the home to be a help to him in the ministry, and he could better minister to them. But just one warning there is that you are tempted to get somebody in the house just to help pay the rent. You know, you get this big house, so you'll have this big house for ministry on campus, and then how are we going to pay the rent? Well, we're going to fill up all the rooms with guys. And boy, you can really get some bad deals this way and can get some people in with you that cause dissension through the whole household. And I think if you have people living with you, you have to be very careful that your own time with your husband is not robbed. And this affects sexually, it affects a lot of wives when they know that there's somebody in the house. And you wonder what they're hearing, what they're seeing, and it's very distressing to some wives who cannot then totally relax if they know that there's a strange man or another girl living in the house. Or if you find that it means that your husband's spending all his time with the two guys. You know, it's just a very precarious thing. I think you have to know before the Lord that this is what he wants. And if he does, then great. But don't go out on your own inviting people in until God makes it clear that this is the best for you and the best for them. And if two guys move in with you, then I think your husband needs to make sure that they understand that there will be a load they'll be carrying, you know, that you're not going to be their maid, but that they'll have responsibility to carry as a part of a family, like any normal family member would have. And that he would also have to make clear to them that there are times when just you and he need to be alone and not with them around. There are times when they need to go to their own room and let you be alone as a family.
Jean called and said he'd be here 5 minutes to pick you up.
Okay. I had another thought on that, but I forgot it. Let's see. Must not have been important.
Thank you.
Well, you're so welcome. I hope some of it was helpful.
I didn't come up with more questions.
Good.
Oh, I have one question. I just thought of it. It's really been a problem, not with me, but with the people that stay with us. You know, we have a two-bedroom house, and we're in one bedroom, and the baby's in the other one. And so we have beds in each bedroom, so when we have guests, we sleep in with the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel terrible about that, because our bedroom, you know, is the guest bedroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they always comment on it. But I'm not about to put them in there with Jennifer, that's for sure. You know,
mm-hmm.
The way you do, you stick them in your bedroom anyway. That's what I do. But I feel bad about it, because they feel
bad. Yeah, I think that if you could pray about some way to... depending on how old your baby is, you'd have to determine what would be the best, but some way to move her in with you, either with a porta crib or
yeah,
with a pallet on the floor.
Because
people really do feel badly, generally speaking, when you move out of your room for them, if there's another room for them. You know, they really do feel more comfortable if they know that you haven't moved out for them. And I think maybe I'd try and move the baby rather than move them, because they would feel much more relaxed. People appreciate a sacrifice, and yet they feel uncomfortable if you've made too great a sacrifice.
Well, it doesn't seem like a sacrifice to me, but it
right.
I always get comment on it.
Right.
Yeah, but it is quite large.
Oh, yeah.
I have to buy something.
Yeah.
Or put her on the floor, but I don't have to cage her up to get this
tame
bed.
My bed used to be quite easy to move in that you could just lift the mattress and the springs and the, you know, it folded kind of cattywampus then, and then you could just scoot it through with the mattress standing up. But yours isn't like that, huh?
It's real stationary. And the diaper table's in there, you know, all her clothes are in there.
Right. Well, just pray that the Lord will give you an idea how to do it, because it seems like the, for your guest's sake, that would be the better plan.
Plus, get that back out and
Yeah, I've lunged it all out. I've done well, but I mean, I've lunged it all out.
No, you could probably buy it. I don't know how big porticoes
are. Yeah, she could sleep in a portico.
Yeah, you could probably buy it and use them at a garage sale or something.
Yeah. That might be a solution. Bless you. Thank you all for coming.